Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. 21-year-old Dylan Storm Roof was arrested yesterday in the massacre of 9 people at the Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina. The young white man had slipped into the church and sat in the pews for an hour before he opened fire. One of the survivors reported that Roof explained his motivation while shooting by saying, quote, "You rape our women and you're taking over the country, you have to go." He apparently reloaded his gun 5 times during the course of the shooting. A 5-year-old girl apparently survived the massacre by playing dead. The FBI has opened a hate crimes investigation into the shooting, but as of now, there are no reports that it is being investigated as a terrorist act. Here are the names of those who were killed. Church pastor and state senator Clementa Pinckney, 54-year-old librarian Cynthia Hurd, church pastor, speech therapist, and girls track and field coach Sharonda Coleman Singleton, 26-year-old Taiwanza Sanders, church janitor, 70-year-old Ethel Lance, church member and Lance's cousin, 87-year-old Susie Jackson, 49-year-old DePayne Middleton Doctor, who was the retired Charleston County Director of the Community Development Block Grant Program, 59-year-old church pastor Mira Thompson, and 74-year-old Daniel Simmons Sr., who died on the hospital operating table. Joining me now live from Charleston is Chenjerai Komanyika. He's an assistant professor of communication studies at Clemson University in South Carolina. He drove to Charleston last night, and he's, of course, Uprising's Daily Newsflash guest expert on Thursdays. Also with Chenjerai is A.D. Carson, a student based in Charleston. I'd like to welcome both of you to the program.
Hi, Sonali. Hello.
So, Chenjerai, you are in Charleston, so can you give us a sense of the significance of what happened yesterday and how it's being felt inside Charleston? What is the atmosphere there right now?
Well, you know, we got here last night and we just spent about, 4 or 5 hours in front of the church talking to people. And I think there's still a stage, I mean, people feel it, but I think there's still a stage of almost, it's unbelievable and inconceivable. I mean, and I don't want to say the wrong thing here in the sense that people are surprised, because I don't think that that's the sense I got from anybody, but just this, the act is so enormous that it's taking people a while to process it.
A.D. Carson, what are your thoughts on this as well? And tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my thoughts are, I think, echoed in Chenjerai's about how people felt out there. Just the nature of the act is such that I think folks really do, and myself included, have, sort of paused to reflect upon it, and it doesn't seem real.
I want to play an excerpt of the Reverend Clemente Pinckney speaking at his church, the church where the massacre took place on Wednesday, the Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston. It's a historic church. This was the Reverend Pinckney speaking in 2013, describing a little bit of the church's history.
My name is Reverend Clemente Pinckney. And as of a couple of weeks ago, I'm in my 4th year of pastoring here at the church. And along with pastoring here at Mother Emmanuel, since the year 2000, it's been my privilege to serve the people in South Carolina Senate District 45 in the state legislature. Where you are is a very special place in Charleston. And it's a very special place because this church and this site, this area, has been tied to the history and life of African Americans since about the early 1800s. This church was built in 1891. The congregation was formed in 1818 by the Reverend Morris Brown, who later became the second bishop of the African Methodist Episcopal Church. And for those of you who may know a little something about our denomination, we started in 1787 through our founder, Richard Allen, who left then St. George's Methodist Episcopal Church because they were telling him he needed to pray after the regular members prayed. And so that's how our denomination began, in a fit of civil disobedience and a little issue with theological fairness, if you will.
And that was the Reverend Clemente Pinckney, former state senator, I should just say state senator, who was one of the 9 people massacred at the Emmanuel AME Church 2 days ago. And in the excerpt that you just heard and watched, he was speaking in 2013 inside of that church for our TV audience. Just a beautiful church, magnificent church with a lot of history, very, very, you know, hundreds of years old history. Now, Chenjerai, how important is this church to the local community there? People refer to it as Mother Emmanuel.
Absolutely. And, you know, the young people we spoke to had a real sense of history, a history of the church, and also of Senator Pinckney as a leader. And, you know, that was interesting because you don't always find young people being deeply connected to politics. But this church, I mean, you just can't underscore such a rich history, right? It's completely, you know, a key moment and a key structure for the entire, you know, denomination of African Methodist Episcopal. It was the church where, you know, Denmark Vesey was planning his uprising. And it's just really a focal point in Charleston, which is a city which already has a deep history when it comes to being an entrance point for, you know, African slaves into the U.S. and just South Carolina's resistance. So it's all these things are laid. It's just really important. And the thing is that talking to people last night, the citizens here have a real strong sense of that history, and they understand that this act was symbolic.
A.D. Carson, are you from Charleston?
No, I'm actually from Illinois. I'm a student at Clemson.
I see. So you came down with Chenjerai. How has this incident, how do you see this incident, you know, just given everything else that's been happening, not just with vigilante violence against African Americans, but police violence as well?
Well, because a large part of my work deals with trying to examine how history affects us today, I think that it fits into this larger narrative of things that are going on that seem to be repeats of things that we've seen in the past. If we examine history, then we get a pattern that's not unfamiliar at all.
And I should mention that a white man at a church in Richmond, Virginia, yesterday reportedly knocked on the doors of a black church and threatened to kill everybody inside. Nothing happened of that in the end, but he did have a tirade. He has been taken into custody. The atmosphere around the country, but particularly in and around black churches and the black community, is likely pretty grim these days. And I understand there were also a few bomb threats at other churches in Charleston yesterday that were luckily, that nothing came of. So Chenjerai, how is the community responding? How are people coming together? We're seeing photographs of flowers and candles, etc., near the site of the church. What is the sense, and particularly in the white community in Charleston, are people coming together?
Well, you know, I can't really speak fully to that. I mean, I was in front of the church last night, and there was, you know, it was a diversity of different kinds of people were there in front of the church, just kind of paying their condolences and respect. I mean, I get the sense that we're still in the very beginning stages of something that's going to evolve into and really continue a new level of the Black Lives Matter movement in relation to this. But it's going to be maybe a little bit different in South Carolina. You know, things here are very much organized around the church. And so, you know, you see people holding church services, and a lot of what's happening has happened in churches down here. There is a protest scheduled tomorrow in Columbia, because now the Confederate flag is something that's coming up as a reemerging in South Carolina as an important site for struggle.
And let's talk about that. The shooter himself was interested in the symbols of the Confederate flag on his clothing. He sported apartheid-era patches from white South Africa and Rhodesia. These are, of course, known symbols of white supremacist groups. And there are several of these groups in South Carolina, as there are in other parts of the country. But Governor Nikki Haley said, you know, she decided to fly the Confederate flag outside the state house. And it's interesting that both the state government and this racist shooter embraced the symbol. How important is it symbolically for people that the governor stopped flying this flag?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. AD, I was wondering if you could comment, because there was something that came up last night in the conversation about the sincerity of her language.
Well, you know, another one of these situations that come up looking at history, we see that the office Nikki Haley holds is the same office held by Benjamin Tillman, who in 1876 was a part of a very similar act. Simon Coker was a state senator who asked if after the Hamburg massacre, if he could pray for a moment. And as he's praying, it's described as the two men killed him as he prayed. And so I think the sincerity of Nikki Haley's words must be taken into question as she holds the same office that got Benjamin Tillman elected to governor after an act that sort of bookmarks this, if we look at it historically.
Nikki Haley said, "We do know that we'll never understand what motivates people to commit acts of violence such as this." And that's really interesting. A white man walks into a church, makes racist statements, massacres 9 people. What's not to know? It's pretty clear what motivated him, right?
It's crystal clear. And, you know, this really gets to the heart of the matter here. You know, one of the things that it's tempting to look at South Carolina as some kind of aberration when it comes to racism. But what I think we're growing into consciousness of now is that the problems of colorblind racism in South Carolina are, you know, something that are certainly deep-rooted here, but it's something that we're dealing with throughout the country. Things being characterized as not being about race, things being characterized as being, you know, people who are trying to raise these issues being characterized as race baiters. And something else I want to bring up is that, and this came up in our conversation last night, as Nikki Haley said the words and gave her very emotional expression, a lot of people down here doubted the sincerity of that because she was saying those words into literally looking at the Confederate flag.
Wow.
So how can you expect to be taken seriously when you have these symbols? And, you know, all around us last night here, right 2 blocks down from the corner of the church is a large statue of John C. Calhoun, the senator and 7th vice president who argued that slavery is a positive good. So you have these symbols all around us here in Charleston, and yet on the same time, people proclaiming that things aren't about race. It's incredible.
Nikki Haley, who makes me ashamed to be South Asian, gave this explanation when confronted about the Confederate flag. She said, quote, "Over the last 3.5 years, I've spent a lot of my days on the phones with CEOs and recruiting jobs to the state. I can honestly say I have not had one conversation with a single CEO about the Confederate flag. I certainly couldn't make any sense of that statement, and I'm guessing you can't either." I also want to talk about Senator Lindsey Graham, the senator from South Carolina who spoke about the shooting. His niece went to school with the shooter, Dylan Roof, and he said in an interview on CNN, quote, "I think he's just one of these whacked out kids. I don't think it's anything broader than that. It's about a young man who is obviously twisted." Again, this attempt to completely isolate this incident as something that's an aberration for which there's just no explanation and therefore nothing can be done about it. Right, Chandra?
Absolutely. And what we're seeing now is people are starting to come into a more sophisticated understanding of the idea and concept of white supremacy. Yes, it's something that interacts with class. Yes, it's something that interacts with all these other oppressions. But white supremacy is not something that's under a hood. When you see someone like this kid going to school with Lindsey Graham's children, what you realize is that these problematic views are all around us. They're not under hoods. They're with our families and they're in the mouths. The things that I want to point out that Dylan Roof said were things that have been said, you know, are discourses that I see on Fox News, that I see in the mouths of politicians, that have been said historically about fears about who's taking over the country and fears about who's raping who and all these kinds of things. So, you know, we have to begin to talk about these things and recognize how they're spread out. Also, and I do want to be clear, when we talk about white supremacists, we're against white supremacy, not white people. And as you're pointing out with Nikki Haley and with, you know, many kinds of people of all, you know, identity categories can promote these problematic views.
Yeah, a few years ago, she said in an interview she considers herself white. So certainly the ideology of white supremacy isn't necessarily restricted to whites. Finally, I wanted just to ask you about the pain that people go through when such things happen. Social media has become a very important medium of expression. One person posted the following tweet: "They are praying, P-R-E-Y-I-N-G, while we are praying." as in worshiping. Another said, quote, "One of the scariest parts is that though white folks rarely came to our church, whenever they did, they were treated so well, so well. So I know that I am alive and working because of the sound, smell, and faith of the black folks in my black Southern church. Now they are killing us there." Chenjerai and A.D. Carson, finally, how important is it for us to understand the pain of a community that is again being targeted?
Well, I think it's extremely important for us to take just a moment to think about and honor those folks who were there. And I heard someone say it's likely that as Gillen Roof was beginning to take the lives of the people, they were probably praying for him. And I think that that's a testament to the power of the faith of the folks in that church and many churches countrywide. And we should just really kind of think for a moment and really, I don't know, I guess it's really even hard for me to put into words right now, because it feels so unreal even making that statement that they were probably praying for him as he was preparing to take their lives. It's difficult.
They welcomed him into the church. Yeah.
They welcomed him. And let me just say this just real quick, Sonali. You know, both AD and I are African-American men. Both of us saw this tragedy, and we're in the state of South Carolina. And so, you know, it's weird. We both do, you know, I'm a journalist and we both writers and scholars, but we're also here just as people who are trying to process this, as black men trying to process this. And, you know, it's challenging because there's anger that you're trying to negotiate. There's structural issues that have to be dealt with here. And you see them in Charleston. And there's just, like you said, the really harsh reality of this tragedy.
I want to thank the two of you so much for joining us and spending this time with us. Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
A.D. Carson is a student at Clemson University in South Carolina, where Chenjerai Kumanyika is also based and where he is an assistant professor of communications studies. This is Uprising, and we're talking about the massacre in Charleston, South Carolina, that took place on Wednesday. And the shooter, Dylan Roof, was just apprehended.